Hello, racing fans. Edison Hatter back with another episode of First Over with Edison Hatter, and this time it's going to be a little different than usual. We're going to try something maybe a little different for the next week or two. Instead of two different episodes for the week of Woodbine Mohawk Racing, we're going to have one mega episode each week. We'll cover both days of racing. Most likely have two different guests to cover most weeks, feel free to provide some feedback to let us know whether you like this format better, if you prefer the two separate episodes, what your thoughts on this are, but for this episode, we will be covering both Friday, December the 3rd, 2021, and Saturday, December the 4th, 2021, racing action at Woodbine Mohawk. We have a 10-race program on Friday night, an 11-race card on Saturday night, and of course, both programs will, as always, start at 7 o'clock Eastern time. And to just jump into this, we're going to start with the Friday evening racing, December the 3rd. And my first guest on the show this evening to help me break down that racing action will be my other Freehold colleague. After we had Rich Mateo on last week, this week we get John Piasek on. So, John, welcome.
Welcome. Not welcome to you. Off to a great start here. Thanks for having me on. It's a pleasure to be here.
So, John, as I told you before we started, we'll go on and at the end of the Mohawk segment I get the opportunity to learn a little bit more about you and your background. But let's just start with talking some racing action. And we have, again, 10 races Friday night at Woodbine Mohawk, a good 10-race program. And as always in race one, we will kick off that $100,000 guaranteed pick five, 20-cent base wager, races one to five. You and I both have tickets to give out. And racing fans, as always, can visit www.woodbine.com/Mohawk/free-programs to get their very own free program to follow along with you and I as we handicap the sequence. And John, we'll jump right in with race one. They're on the trot going for 17,000. It's four-year-olds and younger, non-winners of two races or 20,000 lifetime. A little more different conditions there for the filly mares, of course, as usual. And you are going to kick it off the sequence by using three horses.
Yes. My whole ticket actually cost $21.60. We'll go over it at the end, but I am starting off with three horses. Number one, Wheeling in Cash gets a lot of post relief here. He left from post 10. Last week at this level, now goes to post one. He was in the Harvest Series earlier in the month, dropped back down to this level last out. Really had a hustle to get to the pocket, but got there by the opening eighth of the mile by the time they passed finish line. The first time, he was down toward the inside and in a good spot. He trotted well, hung on to be third, and I have to figure that since he's got a better post, he won't have to work as hard early and should have enough left to hang on in the end. Number two, LD's Patrick is somebody else I'm using. He probably would have won at this level last time out on November 18th. He led most of the way, and at about the quarter mile pole, he made a break. And that break did not last very long. He was only off stride for about 3 seconds. He quickly got back trotting, but he could not find a spot back on the course. He had to stay inside the pylons a lot of the way. There's just no room to get out, and that ended up costing him quite a bit. Two starts back at this level on November 11th, he broke at the start, was way behind, and made up a ton of ground late to get fifth as the favorite. Qualified here last Friday, had a very good qualifying mile of 159 and 2. I got to figure as long as he stays trotting, he's got a big chance. And Jim McDonald had a choice between him, number three, and number eight, and he ended up going with LD's Patrick, and I think that's a good sign. Paul McNell also had a choice between number five and number six, and he picked number six, Draven Hanover, who's my other horse, at a bit of a price. He's at 10-1 on morning line. He's actually coming up from Yonkers. He broke his maiden there last time, a few starts back, I should say, on October 14th. He made a nifty little move to the front and held on for the win. Broke in his last start in New York on November 4th. Has some time off. Qualified all right here last week. Went in 201-1 and made up good ground in the stretch. He hasn't had that many chances against non-winners of two types, and I think he could shake things up at a price.
Well, John, it feels like every night on my show here, we always have that fun game of, you know, can me and my guest both hit the pick five? Well, John, our answer is no, very quickly. I use three horses as well, but they are three totally different horses.
Well, that kind of race, I mean, in a young trotting race like this, generally you go in a lot of different directions. So I don't blame you.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, the one that you use that I'm willing to go against is the two LDs Patrick. I think the back-to-back breaking issue just kind of caused me a little bit of concern that obviously taking a good bit of money, I'm going to take the stand against him. I will use the four Cash Hudson, who's also had some breaking issues in the form lines, but seems to have settled it down the past three, and in particular has put in three pretty good races, graduated the non-winners of one, two back, last time out finished a good second tier at the non-winners of two at 7-2. And then the five Stormont Barbecue I will use as well, 8-1 on the morning line. Hasn't gotten off the gate particularly well, but has closed pretty nicely, 28-1, 28-2 closing quarters in the last two. So we'll give this one a look. But obviously the clear concern here is the time off. She has not seen the track since October 28th, so that's about 4 or 5 weeks off now at this point. And then the eighth, A World of Good Times, is one I just have to use here on the drop. Racing against non-winners of three, was in the Harvest Series, so it's seen some tougher company. Hasn't picked up a whole lot of checks in there, though. Did have a second in the Harvest Series, November 12th, behind Emerald Wings, and then finished fifth in one of those non-winners of three races. But getting back down here to non-winners of two might help out his chances, but obviously will have to work out the trip from the outside post. So 4, 5, 8 for me. 1, 2, and 6 for you, John, and that probably means that the betting public and our listeners should probably use the 3 and the 7 to start their ticket, right? And just use the other two.
Well, I can't blame anybody for liking anybody in here. In fact, I almost used Cash Hudson. I did like his last start. I just figured that he's going to be overbet. And as part of my general pick five philosophy, too, if you find a favorite who is possibly vulnerable, don't use them. And I think Cash Hudson is going to be used on most tickets. I think he's going to be a pretty solid favorite. And I'm just not that crazy about him, so I'm going to toss him. And I figure if I can beat him, I'm in pretty good shape.
Now, John, you started talking a little bit there on pick five ticket construction. And, you know, that's something that maybe we haven't discussed as much on the show as we should. And maybe I need to start to build that into the show some more. So I get the opportunity to do it here, John, with you in race two. We're going Pacers for 16,000, two-year-olds, non-winners of one race, or 10,000 lifetime. So earlier in the day, when you sent this to me originally, you wanted to use the 5 and the 6. And then as you looked back through it, you changed your mind and ended up going to the 3 and the 6. So talk a little bit about the ticket construction, you know, price, and how you ended up using the actual two that you are, the 3 and the 6.
Well, the horse who I had the whole way, and in fact, I almost singled this horse, but I didn't, is number 6, Hashtag Money. He's only raced two times. He's a two-year-old. He had a big last quarter last time out on November 26th. In fact, him and Sipa Bourbon are actually exiting the same race. Hashtag Money sat near the pace throughout. Probably could have won, almost should have won, but he got swallowed up by a very fast closing Katie's Bet in that race and just missed. In most normal circumstances, he probably wins. He took a big step forward there. I know our good friend Rich last week said, don't look at times too much, but he did go 2 seconds faster last week than he did 2 weeks prior. And that was with a track which was flurrying and had a 1 second variation. So Hashtag Money definitely took a big step forward, and that's very encouraging to me. Sipa Bourbon, I originally liked because based on his lines, it looked like he had a tough trip, a line showing him getting poked out of the half, poked out at the three quarters. And he did have some traffic trouble in that race. In fact, there were some spots in the stretch about the 8th or 3/16 balls where he was getting kind of bumped around, which kind of impacted his move. I don't think Chucky Hanover, number 3, I took a second look at him. I think he is a better value. I mean, not a value because he is probably going to be the favorite, but I think he's a more likely winner and a better horse to use. Trained and driven by Paul McDonnell. He made his third career start last out. He's been getting much better with every race. He absolutely flew home last time out on the 8th, went a last quarter in 26-1, closed strongly to get fourth. And I think if he puts an effort like that together, again, he's got a big chance. The only thing that might hamper him is there's not a lot of early speed in this race. I think most likely to leave a point, a rebel, number 1, and number 6, Hashtag Money. So it could possibly impact him, but I think he's got a pretty big chance of at least, if nothing else, turning in a big effort.
So 3 and 6 for you here in race two, John. For me, I wind up using 4 of them in here. I'll use the 1, the 3, the 5, and the 6. So you've already pretty well covered for me the 3, the 5, and the 6. And I think you kind of partially covered the 1 as well there. But just a couple of other notes I had in here. So for the 5, or for the 3 rather, Chucky Hanover, yeah, it comes off that 6 scratch though, November 15th. So again, maybe that's the cause for concern, but that 26-1 last quarter in the most recent start definitely stands out on the page pretty quickly. And again, I'd use the 5 and the 6 like you. And then the 1, Born a Rebel, you know, if I'm using the 6 hashtag money on that last effort where he was only beaten in the neck by Katie's Bet, I almost feel like I have to use the 1, Born a Rebel as well, if that's the reasoning I'm using. Because Katie's Bet defeated Born a Rebel by only 1 length in their most recent matchup back on November the 26th. So that was obviously the common race there. So Born a Rebel was post 7 that day, closing well through the stretch, and obviously draws the rail here today. So I'll be using 1, 3, 5, and 6 here. So I've gone 3 by 4 so far. So either we're going to skinny the ticket down a good bit the rest of the way, or I'm spending a lot of money, and I can tell you it's the former. So going to get more selective here for me a little later in the sequence. But we'll turn the page now to race 3. The Pacer is going for 12,000. It's Fillies and Mares, non-winners of 4,200 in their last 5 starts, or non-winners of 9,100 in their last 10 starts. And for you in here, John, you will be using 3.
That's correct. And also, I should know, because I know you are reading out the conditions, it is important to look at the conditions, I think, especially in races like this. And tracks like Mohawk, but personally, I'm not as familiar with the conditions there, because I just don't play that much, and it can be very detailed, so it is important to look through those. I went 3 deep in here. Number 1, Tugging on Credit. Did it the hard way last time out on November 15th. Was on the outside most of the way. In fact, almost half the way. Had a clear shot. Couldn't quite get there, but ended up getting 3rd. Has been knocking on the door against similar. Figured that you could step up here. Rocking with Custard, number 2, has the inside post and early speed. Had a very hard time clearing 3 starts back, but did manage to get to the front and almost held on. 1 against fairly similar types, 2 starts back, 1 for an optional 16,000 tag, and 1 actually quite easily. And then just missed last time out. She's been banging on the door pretty hard, and I think she's a must-use. And the other one in here is number 9, My Baby Girl, on the far outside. Has had really absolutely no post luck. She's gotten post 10 last time, got hung most of the way, and ended up flattening out in the last few strides. It's really a big if she can get an inside spot, but if she does, I have to figure that she'll go a lot better. And she also had a lot of sub-28 final quarters under her belt in her prior starts. Last time out, after getting hung wide, she kind of walked home in 29-1. Got to figure, again, if she gets to the inside, then she's going to come home pretty strongly.
Well, John, for the listeners of my show here, they've got to be sick of me saying it at this point, but I say it all the time in these kind of races. Use the horses that are dropping. And you know what? It hasn't really failed me yet. It generally does seem to pick the winner so some way, somehow. So as usual, I'm going that route, and that's why I use the 5, the 7, and the 9. The 5's Doc's Harmony is up against non-winners of 6,000 last time, against non-winners of 3,002 back. I like the speed that she showed off the gate there. She cleared to the top past the quarter, tired a bit through the stretch, but to hear back on the drop down, and she draws inside, well, she draws at least post 5, and obviously inside of my other 2 selections, I will use her. 7, Mary Cat, another one making the big drop, has been against non-winners of 12,000 in the recent form line, non-winners of 9,000, non-winners of 6,000. Hasn't been beaten by a whole lot and was actually favored at non-winners of 6,000 3 starts ago. And now she takes another drop down the class ladder to this non-winners of 4,200. And then the 10, My Baby Girl, as you mentioned, also on the drop down from the non-winners of 6,000. Now, this one's probably been the best on paper, at least. 5 wins this year of my selections, at least, and has picked up a 2nd and 3rd and been favored actually a couple times at this non-winners of 6,000 level, consistently taking money. So should definitely take money at the non-winners of 4,200. But we'll have to work out the trip from post 9. So 5, 7, 9 for me here, race 3. For you, John, we go 1, 2, and 9. And we'll flip the page to race number 4, claiming 17,500 for non-winners of 78,000 lifetime on the pace for a purse of 11,000. And you will once again use 3 in here.
I used 3, and once again, I did not use Morningline favorite. And in my ticket, which I'll outline, I guess, to the end of this segment, I only used one morning line favorite, and that is number three, Chucky Hanover, in race two. And that's kind of a big part of how I approach pick fives in general, is trying to beat favorites. Because my take is most tickets use the favorite. So if favorite keeps losing, you'll eliminate a lot of tickets, and you'll drive up your possible payoff. And especially in a sequence like this with a lot of wide-open races, I go in trying to find out how to be the favorite, if I can. Like, I don't want to force anything, but if I could beat the favorite, I'll certainly try to. Race number four, claiming as you said, claiming 17.5, going three deep. Century Gigolo had been racing very well. He made a premature move in his last start. First time he was at this level, in fact, he had been competing for higher tags earlier in the meet. Dropped down his level, went off as a pretty big favorite last time, made a premature move, flattened out, absolutely walked home. He had absolutely no punch in the stretch. Got to figure that if Jim McDonald times the move properly, he's got a better chance here. And I'm actually kind of hoping that last race scares betters off, because I think he's a lot better than that race. Rocket Twist, number five, has been knocking on the door against these types. He actually won at this level. Two starts back at 14-1, really flew from behind, and one going away. Not going to get 14-1 on him tonight, I figure, but I figure that he could either lead a first overcharge or possibly grab some cover and slingshot to victory. And Radley Hanover, number seven, no favors here from the post draw. He has drawn the outside post. He's spent most of his last few starts just treading water on the outside. In his last start, where he was not parked to the quarter, that was on November 11th, and he came home in a solid 28 seconds flat after making a move toward the outside as it turned home. So, got to figure that as long as he can find the pylons, and it's also not that far outside, he's in post 7, I got to figure he has a better chance. And it's worth noting also, just for the record, that Jim McDonald picked him over Century Gigolo.
So for me, John, I kept it pretty simple in here. I just ended up using the 3 and the 5. I just thought personally they were the two most consistent. A lot of these obviously racing at this level in most of their most recent starts. And just a band that's just always been there with them. Has two wins in the last six here in the program. And, you know, has burned some money as the favorite, so definitely have to be wary of that. But Trevor Henry back in the bike, and with Trevor Henry, 2 for 4, so a little bit better number there for just a bandit who has 4 wins this year only, but 7 seconds and 5/3. I mean, the 5 Rocket Twist did beat just a bandit 2 starts back. This is a deep closer, you know, and it's really come out in the last 2 races. I got away, you know, if you look at the 5 most recent races of the opening quarter, this horse has been 1st, 1st, 4th, 7th, and 9th, and yet those 2 most recent might have actually been 2 of his better. So it seems new tactics, but it seems to be working well. So I definitely won't expect him to be too forwardly placed here early on, but hopefully a good back half of the mile could see him enter the winner's circle. So 3-5 for me, 4-5, and 7 for you. And John will go to race 5, the payoff leg. They are filly and mare, 5-year-old and younger, non-winners of 3 races or 30,000 lifetime on the pace, going for a purse of 18,000. And, you know, unlike you, I end up using a good number of those morning line favorites in the first couple. So I figured here, for both the price of my ticket and for the sake of the payout, if I hit, I need to take a stand somewhere. And I'm taking a stand here with the 3 Broken at 4-1 on the morning line. I'm going to single her in this spot. She has a win against non-winners of 2-5 back, a winner against non-winners of 3, 2 starts ago. And I just kind of like the progression here. She's been racing very well, gets Jonathan Drury back in the bike. And again, these two teamed up for the win a while back, and it just kind of seems to me that she's been pretty consistently right there. She's been starting to get better here in form recently, and I'm willing to take the chance with her here, Broken, my single in race 5. But you don't use her. You use 2 others instead.
I like Broken quite a bit, but I did end up going against her. I got number 6 in here, who has a great name. I have not actually I watched the replay, but I didn't hear Ken's call, so I'm kind of curious as to how he pronounces PL. Ooh, yeah.
Well, hang on, John. I got to interject there. You know, now we've got one at Rosecroft right now. that is very similar as well. It is, oh, look at you, but it is, I don't know, whatever number, like eight or nine O's like that before. So it's, oh, for Pete Medhurst, I know it's, oh, look at you. So, you know.
Well, you know, I'm hoping that voice comes up to Freehold. Well, I'm not going to say that, but if the voice came up to Freehold, then I'm sure you or if one of us is filling in, we definitely have a field day with that one. In fact, I know tonight, as we're doing this, it's Thursday night, and tonight, Larry Letterman is calling at Meadowlands, and I know he would definitely have a fun time with that name.
Definitely agree with you there. Yeah, definitely looking forward to it. Yeah, no secrets here. You and I are recording this Thursday evening, and this will be published Thursday night, so probably some people are listening to this tonight, but yeah, I don't know about you, but yeah, definitely I got the Meadowlands feed up with my background here and ready to go for nine race program tonight. And well, I guess it's too late to promote it because I doubt anyone's listening. This will be published after the sequence is off. But hey, $20,000 carryover in that pick six tonight. So definitely looking forward to some Meadowlands action tonight. But anyway, John, you're two here in race six, race five.
Yes, PL. Ooh, yeah. In her last two starts that were in stakes, actually won both of them and won both of them going away in pretty impressive fashion. Trevor Henry picked her over number five. She's taken a jump up in class. Is that correct? Yeah. Slight jump up in class. But I got to figure the way she's been pacing in her last few, she's got a big shot either way. And number nine, Doc's Delight is another one I'm using. She's been knocking on the door. Made kind of a premature move to the lead in her last start. Open up a clear lead off the back stretch, and that may have flattened her out, but she did hang on, finish second, had some good last quarters under her belt, including one on October 29th, where she came home in 26 and 45 seconds. And I got one horse in here who's 6-1, one horse who's 7-2. I got to figure that these two, if I am still alive going into the final leg, could produce a decent payoff.
Yeah, we're both going against the one here, Millie's Million, who is your favorite. 7-14 this year, draws the rail at 5-2. So definitely, I think the way our tickets are structured, whichever one of us, hopefully one of us will hit, definitely should be in for a good payout. But unless we got some dead heats or something crazy going on, and actually a couple of the races, John, there is not really much hope for both of us to hit.
Yeah, well, you know, I guess in all likelihood, somebody's going to hit this thing. So if it's me or you or our listeners out there who maybe like buying our two tickets, then, you know, all the better.
Well, to recap our tickets here, John, for me, it is a 4-5-8 with 1-3-5-6 with 5-7-9 with 3-5 with 3 for $14.40. And for you?
I got 1-2-6 with 3-6 with 1-2-9 with 4-5-7 with 6-9.
And that is a $21.60 play for you.
Yes, that's correct.
So, John, we still have one featured race here to talk about on the card quickly. Race number 9, the Pacers, 18,000. Fillies and Mares, non-winners of 9,000 in their last five starts, or non-winners of 24,500 in their last 10 starts. And the morning line favorite here, the 9, Better Be Donna N, taking the big plunge down in class off of the 6 scratch. But my top selection here, I'm going to go to the 6, Kickin' Cowgirl. Three consecutive post sevens. A pretty good closing second last time out at this non-winners of 9,000 level. She was the very lukewarm 2-1 favorite to end up being defeated by a pretty good Trafalgar. So she, you know, once again, probably will be coming from off of the pace. But with the right pace set up, she came home with 27-1 in that most recent effort. I like her chances here tonight. So I'll go with Kickin' Cowgirl in the featured 9th race. What about you, John?
I like her quite a bit as well. Definitely has the best final quarters in the field. There's a lot of ways that could go in here, but I would lean toward number 3, Jim Bellino, who actually raced in New Jersey for a little while, I think either last year or 2 years ago. Went home in a very sharp 27-1. Last time out on the 26th, ended up getting 6th after kind of falling a little too far behind in the stretch. Raced well against better than these, including a new miss four starts back on November 6th. Had post eight, found her way down to the pylons, held on for second, came home in 27 and four at 33-1. Don't think we got those odds again, but it should be a decent value and will be coming home late and was the driver's choice.
Yeah, I find it interesting looking at this field that, John, you're looking at a horse that you use that I think will take some money in here. But, you know, she's 1 for 21 this year. Your likely favorite, Better Be Donna, is 2 for 26 this year. But besides that, there's a lot of winners in this race. My selection, Kicking Cowgirl, 8 for 28 this year, 8 for 18 for Setting the Precedent, 9 for 29 for How's Glenn Mavis. So a lot of winners in here for sure. So is in that sense for you, it may be a concern that Jimbalina hasn't quite found the winner circle as much as some of these?
Not really, only because I don't know, like, who she's been racing against all year long. And I think, especially in harness, if the circumstances kind of fall into place, more or less anybody can win certain races. So I wouldn't hold that too much against the horse. Not as much as I would in thoroughbreds, just based on my general observations.
Yeah, I won't disagree with you there, and especially someone, for example, Better Be Donna N here. I think it's honestly we can agree the class of the field, obviously the most lifetime earning. She's gone sub-150 before, but again, she only has two wins this year, but she's obviously been facing tougher, so, you know, I'm not sure if that's always something you can look at, but obviously if a horse has been facing easier and, is just hanging or not beating horses that they should be, that's another story, but yeah, good answer there. Won't disagree with you there. So anyway, John, that was a look here at our 10-race program at Woodbine Mohawk. Friday, December the 3rd, 2021, 7 p.m. first post time, $100,000 early, pick five guarantee as always. And again, free programs online at www.woodbine.com/Mohawk/free-programs. So John, to wrap up with you, and before we bring in our next guest, we'll take a little halftime timeout from the handicapping to talk to you and obviously to our next guest as well a little bit. So starting with you, John, so you work in our Freehold Racing office. Mm-hmm. You've actually been doing a little bit of charting at Yonkers remotely lately, and also work for America's Best Racing. So just talk a little bit about what all you do, and for that matter, also how you got into the industry originally.
Yeah, well, I grew up in a town in Jersey called Cranford, and it's about halfway between Monmouth Park and Meadowlands. So I went to both tracks quite a bit growing up. I am more of a thoroughbred fan and definitely more of a thoroughbred better. I don't really bet a ton of harness. But I do like both. I respect both quite a bit. And I think know more about harness than the average thoroughbred fan out there. I've been writing about thoroughbreds in some capacity for about 7 years. Six and a half years, I guess. I started doing it in the summer of 2015 on the racingbiz.com as I started writing about New Jersey, and in some capacity I've kept myself visible. Right now on America's Best Racing, I do a weekly column called Piasek's Plays, which spotlights two thoroughbred races at a different track each week, and I talk about how I would play them, kind of give out my betting strategy. And I also do a weekly column at NYRA called the Beginner's Bet of the Week, where I outline a different bet and I talk about how to play it on that week's NYRA card. At Freehold, I've been doing that since 2018. Rich Mate, who I know you had on last weekend, is my compadre in the racing office. He told me about the job, and I helped put together all the races at Freehold. I do some of their social media. I do some press. I occasionally come up with decent ideas for races. Like this Saturday, we have the Toys for Tots Pace, sponsored by Peter and Mary Grandage. So if you are in the Freehold area, come on out. Donate a toy. Donate some money to Toys for Tots, benefiting kids in the Freehold area. And we have a race on Saturday called the Toys for Tots Pace, because we have a lot of drivers who drive here who are very young. And so I decided to kind of spotlight them and have a race for drivers under age 30. So it's Jack Pelling, Casper Boget, Troy Byer, Brett Beckwith, Tyler Miller, Austin Siegelman, who's our leading driver, Trey Porter and Luke Hannes. So it's going to be a fun race. We'll have a winner's circle presentation after the race, which we'll have a blanket, I think a blanket for the winner. Peter Grandage, who sponsors the race, is going to be there. We'll have former New Jersey Devils, Bruce Driver, and Grant Marshall there as well. So it's going to be a fun day and a fun card.
Yeah, most certainly. Should be interesting. I'm just now looking over that race, John, as we talk about. That's our sixth race on Saturday, which should be about a 2:10-ish post time, I believe. And yeah, so eight different drivers, all under the age of 30, you know, between two of my tracks, and really, I guess all three that I work at, Meadowlands, Freehold, and Rosecroft. It seems like we've got a lot of really good young driving talent out there right now. And this, kudos to you and the rest of the folks in Racing Office for putting this together. I think it should be a really good spotlight on some of these young drivers we've got. And for some of them, gosh, I mean, Austin Siegelman, you know, for as great as he's been, you know, relative to this field at 29, he seems pretty old, but you got to remember, he's still only just 29, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it's really funny to think about it that way, because the driving colony at Freehold is so young that he comes off as kind of one of the elder statesmen. But then, you know, he drives at Yonkers during the week, and he comes off as one of the younger guys in the colony. So it's very interesting how that dynamic works.
So, John, I'm just taking a look here, reading the conditions for the race. So, something maybe I was unfamiliar with. So, in terms of the driver assignment, so that was random assignment here?
Yeah, it's all random.
So, that kind of makes it interesting as well, then, maybe the opportunity to see some teaming up here of, you know, trainers, drivers, maybe you otherwise might not see. So, definitely can provide for an interesting race, for sure.
Yeah, but there are no bad drivers in this group. I mean, it's all guys who can hold their own, and that's what makes the race a lot of fun, in my book. It's not just like a gimmick. It's all like actual drivers out here.
Yeah, absolutely. For sure. They're all very, very good in their own right, and they've got some pretty good horses as well in there, so that should for sure be an exciting card this coming Saturday. And yeah, I guess just to finish our little Freehold promotion here, we're just about done for the winter here, for a week off. We'll go through December the 18th. We don't race Christmas week. Mm-hmm. And then we do race New Year's Eve and New Year's Day. And, John, in January, we go back to the good old 3 days a week.
Yes. Taking advantage of, essentially, of the horse population, we'll add Thursdays. In the month of January, starting in February, kind of when Pocono and Saratoga come back, we'll cut back and go to Fridays and Saturdays, and that's the way it's going to be till the end of May. But, you know, last winter we had a lot of big cards, a lot of full field, a lot of great racing. So hopefully it'll be the same thing this January.
Definitely something to look forward to. And, gosh, hard to believe for me, January 7th. So that's coming up in like a month. It's already almost been a full year that I've been at Freehold. Time sure does fly. But, yeah, once we get to that January 3 days a week, it's just a quick slippery slope into May, and then all of a sudden we are hosting the kickoff to the road to the Hamiltonian with the Dexter Cup. So plenty of great racing action here from Freehold for the next coming months for us, and something to look forward to for the fans listening, for sure.
Yes, definitely. I mean, Freehold, of course, known as the afternoon delight, but over the last few years, definitely seeing an increase in the horse population, increase in handle. So far this year, it's been good.
Well, John, thank you so much for taking the time here today on the show, and we'll wish you the best of luck tomorrow at Woodbine Mohawk with your ticket. And again, thanks once again for joining here today.
Thank you very much. Hopefully I'm at least alive through leg one, and I give myself a little bit of a thrill and all the listeners. At least hopefully one of us is. That way, you know, these people here can be like, well, you know, I got at least 20 minutes of excitement.
Most certainly, at least that is for sure the goal. So once again, thank you to John for joining us here today.
A pleasure.
So with our Friday evening racing covered, we'll now turn our attention to the Saturday evening card, Saturday, December the 4th, 2021, at Woodbine Mohawk. And with that, I'll welcome in my second guest of this show, Howard Kravitz. Howard, welcome back to the show again.
Hi, Edison. It's a pleasure to be with you, and I'm excited about this Saturday card at Woodbine. Fantastic early pick five we're going to talk about.
Well, Howard, before we get into that card, I guess first things first, you know, John and I wrapped up with a little bit of a little discussion to kind of give the little bit of a break from the handicapping. And Howard, I haven't talked to you in quite some time, so we can do a little catching up here. So first things first, I know you were at closing day at Arlington. So you know what? I'm so disappointed. I never actually did make it out there before the end of racing. But talk a little bit about what that was like for you this year.
Yeah, I live about 20 minutes north of Arlington. It was pretty emotional. A lot of mixed feelings, really. I mean, it was a beautiful day. There's a nice crowd out there. They allowed, I think, like 75% capacity. But really, the elephant in the room, of course, is not only was the closing day, it's the last closing day ever. And it's just a real shame. I don't want to get into the politics and everything, but you know, Arlington has been a staple in the Chicago area for a very long time. One of the best turf courses in the country year after year. Unfortunately, the quality of the racing has just gone down for the last several years, other than, of course, the fantastic Million Day, which this year, the big race wasn't even worth $1 million. But anyway, it's a beautiful track. I always have great memories there. And it was really a fantastic last day that I was able to spend with my friends. But it is definitely bittersweet, that's for sure.
So, Howard, how about Breeders' Cup weekend? How did that go for you? Any gambling luck or otherwise?
Well, it's interesting to say that. I had my first foray into the BCBC, the Breeders' Cup Betting Challenge. I was fortunate enough to qualify for the BCBC, which, of course, most people know, I believe, whether you're a thoroughbred fan or a harness fan. It's the biggest live money contest in the world. It's a $10,000 entry fee. I was able to win that seat in a contest at Canterbury Park in Minnesota back in September. So I was actually at the Breeders' Cup Edison in San Diego. My first time at Del Mar. Absolutely wonderful. Had a fantastic time. Great weekend. And just the main betting story for me is, as a rookie, I did not have a great Friday, but the second day, Saturday, I had $5,000 left in my my bet in my account, so to speak, and I played a $2,500 double that hit. It was life is good to loves only you in the Philly Mirror turf, and that brought me up to $24,000. So with a few races left at us, and I was 13th out of 540 people, and first prize is $400K. Did not do well after that particular race, but had a great time. I still walked away with some cash, and it's an experience that I'll never forget.
Wow, that's quite an experience. And I'll give you credit for coming up with the Japanese horse there on the Philly Mare turf. Phew, that's a tough one to come up with. So Howard, so what now? My knowledge on tournaments is a little iffy. In fact, I did a Canterbury tournament earlier this year online. That's the only tournament I've ever done in my life, actually. But for the BCBC, what's the format? Is that the like five races minimum each day with like $2,000 bet, something like that, right?
Yeah. So you start with, so it is a $10,000 entry fee, but $2,500 of that goes into the prize pool, Edison. So you start with $7,500. It's real live money. Win, play, show, exacta, tries, or doubles are only bets you can make. And you have to bet, this year you had to bet three mandatory races on Friday, the juvenile day, $600 minimums, and then seven a minimum of the, I think was nine races on Saturday. Again, $600 minimum. So you had to bet 10 races, $600 minimums. If you're interested in contest strategy, I actually had the winner, Matt Miller, who's actually a Chicagoan as well, on my podcast on YouTube called the HHH Racing Podcast, which hopefully you'll have a chance to be on very soon. And we talked about turn strategy, but that was the plan. And most people, you know, pick their spots and make big bets. And that's what the winner did. He bet all in $33,000, Edison, on Knicks Go, and ended up winning the tournament.
I was going to say, Howard, you should have called me up about the time you got that double home, because the only thing I said on TVG was that night while I was at the Meadowlands, I threw in my opinion on the Breeders' Cup Classic and said, well, you know what? I've been wrong about everything this whole week, but I will tell you one thing I'm certain on is that Knicks Go is going to go down the highway, take every dollar you own and bet it. So you know what? If we should have hooked up on this, Howard.
Yeah, we should have. I actually liked Central Quality, I have to admit, in the Classic, but Knicks Go, you know, got a little bit loose and is just a very talented horse. Loves Only You, you know, there was never a Japanese horse to win a Breeders' Cup race, but I just thought she had a ton of back class, and I just thought it was her time, and I thought it was a bit of a suspect field, and I just decided to go ahead and gun it in that spot. I didn't think Life is Good could lose at all. And it just worked out. It was really fantastic. I talked about the story on my podcast because my father had passed away 4 years to the day that race occurred. And so it was quite an emotional victory for me. But it was a great experience. Anyone has a chance to go to the Breeders' Cup, or be involved with the BCBC. I highly recommend it.
So Howard, last question for me on that topic. It just got me thinking, you know, so obviously, you know, my limited tournament knowledge, I am well aware of live money, you know, contests, but maybe a stupid question, but the live money contest. So when you bet $200 to win on a horse, does that actually go into the parimutuel pool or do they kind of keep this separate?
No, and everything goes in the parimutuel pool. And in fact, and this has been proven over the years, I mean, you have 500, you can do the math, Edison, there's, you know, 530 contestants betting, you know, large sums of money because we all start with 7,500. It absolutely affects the betting pool. And this was talked about quite a bit after the Breeders' Cup that, you know, Nick Sko was a huge overlay, at least most people's opinion, went off at 3-1 when Essential Quality, I believe, 8-5 or 9-5. I'd have to look that up. And there's no question that the BCBC tournament had an effect on that, even with the big pool sizes in the Breeders' Cup, because there was a lot of buzz on Essential Quality, as you well know, in their week or two before. So, no, that money is part of the parimutuel pool.
Yeah, I just find that interesting because, you know, obviously the Breeders' Cup with those type of pools could still influence, but not as much. But of course, if you're in a smaller tournament, especially if it's in harness world, if you put, you know, 33,000 to win on a horse, your odds are going to be pretty significantly affected. So some interesting stuff to know. So Howard, so on my end, the only update I've really got for you is, gosh, I guess this past week, I know we chatted about it by email, but yeah, I did. My record by myself for driving on a day is 18 hours from Maryland to Miami straight through. We got close on Sunday. We got 17 hours in from New York City to Maryland to pick up my cousin, drop her off in Knoxville, Tennessee for school for the end of the semester here, and I got to Atlanta overnight. Got to Tampa to visit someone on Monday, and I did get to see Tampa Bay Downs for the first time ever. Still haven't seen live racing there, though, unfortunately. And then yesterday, I went through Tuesday, through Gainesville to see my cousin up there, and unfortunately, I had to buy a Florida polo, so I was an Alabama fan. I'm not sure how often I'll wear that. And then yesterday, I set another record, personally, a 14-hour drive from Florida before calling a race car at Rosecroft last night. So that's my weekly update for you.
Edison, a long car ride for me is like 2 hours. I am not a big fan of car rides. I much rather fly. Is there like an Edison tracker? You know, there's like that Santa tracker, you know, coming up here for the kids to see where Santa Claus is. You got to find the Edison tracker so we can follow you on Twitter. Where is Edison?
Now, I got to say, I just got to read a couple things here, Howard, while we're talking about this. You know, I put it in a Facebook group we have with some racetrack announcers, saying, you know, just drove 14 hours before calling this car. What's people's records? And it turns out there's a lot of crazy ones in there. Let's see, 6.5 hours to Yonkers for Wayne Tevin. I believe he's an announcer up at Buffalo. Trey Colbeck up in Canada, 8.5 hours from Winnipeg to Saskatoon. Mike Cushing did 7 hours a couple occasions from Farmington, Maine to Monticello. Now, this is the record that I found in here. Michael Carter said he did Mississippi to Rosecroft before calling a card. Wow. Jeff Zittick has flown from Texas, and he said he saw three Houstons that day: Houston, Texas; Houston, Pennsylvania; and Roger Houston.
Very good. Very well played. Well played.
Kenzer Penning did 12 hours to Running Aces, and I remember this night last fall, he did 9 hours to Rosecroft from Ohio, and then he actually drove back after that car because he had a horse in the next day at Dayton. James Witherite did 6 hours to Vernon. Roger Houston, eight hours every year since 1990 from Canonsburg, Pennsylvania to Goshen, New York, home of the Harness Racing Hall of Fame. And also, Ken Terpenning also added in there, he drove to Hawkinsville, Georgia from Ohio to announce their Harness Festival a few years ago. So, turns out I'm not the only one. I guess all of us announcers are crazy with some drives before calling cards.
Well, what's crazy about what you just said is not only are people taking long drives, but then calling races after that. I mean, you got to be exhausted just driving that long, and then you're calling anywhere from, what, probably 9 to 13 races or whatnot. I mean, that's really amazing. But I would highly recommend if you're going to drive that long, you try to do it in the best weather possible, because if you're doing the winter in the north, that could be dicey, I would assume.
Ooh, I did try it in the winter one time down to Florida, actually almost exactly a year ago to the day. I watched the last ever Greyhound race in Jacksonville, and that was just miserable, cold, kind of ice, a little bit of snow, driving through parts of Virginia before I got into the south, and that was just a miserable drive. So good weather though this time, beautiful 70s down in Florida, and I surely wish I was there instead of cold Maryland right now.
Understood.
But probably colder in your neck of the woods out there in Chicagoland. So I guess at least there's that much.
You know, actually, today, as we're filming this here on Thursday, it was actually in the low 50s the last few days. The bottom is going to drop out any time now, but actually saw some people on the golf course today, believe it or not. But yeah, it's going to get plenty cold, and we'll see our share of wind and snow anytime now.
You know, that's the other thing I purchased while at the University of Florida. In fact, I'm looking at it right now. I'm just holding my hand and playing with it. It's some University of Florida golf balls. Because, you know, as the Alabama fan, my logic is, you know, not driving it far enough, right? So just see that Florida logo and probably should want to launch it, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
We'll see how that theory goes on Sunday. But anyway, Howard, let's get into some handicapping. So we have some Saturday night racing, 11 races of Woodbine Mohawk, a 7 p.m. first post, and the early pick five, as always, starts in race one, a $100,000 guaranteed pool, 20-cent base wager, races 1 to 5. We both have tickets to give out. And we'll jump right in with race one, Trotters, going for 12,000, non-winners of 3,000 in their last 5 starts, or non-winners of 9,200 in the last 8 starts. And for you here, you're going to use just 2 to kick it off.
Yeah, I think you just mentioned the conditions of this race. I think it's really, really important in this particular condition race to look at where these horses were running in terms of what level, because I'm usually going to be leaning towards horses that are coming out of the tougher condition races. When you have, you know, non-winners of 3 last 5 and then or non-winners of 9 last 8, I think that's quite a big difference there, even if the math is not that much different. So I was looking for class a lot. Number 5, GP Dreamin' for Jody Jameson, is one of those horses that, you know, in theory is definitely dropping down. Now, when you look at the PPs of GP Dreamin', who, by the way, is 3-1 morning line, looks a little bit ugly. I mean, you see a break, you see, finish 9th by 16th. I mean, ugly. However, this horse, like I said, is dropping. And I think this is sort of drop and pop. I think Jody's going to leave, you know, from the wings to the gate. And if this horse stays flat and is ridden aggressively, I can very easily see this horse with a wire job here. Just those last 2 to me are complete tosses out. That break, by the way, was, of course, of Flamborough on the half. That probably is not what this mare does best. And then the last time was from the 10 hole, basically parked the mile and just stopped. So I think GP Dreamin' is very much dirtied up form and is the horse to beat. The other one I mentioned here is the 9, Victor Invictus, for Doug McNair in the bike. Not a huge fan of the post, but this is a big driver change, and I think that's going to play well here. And the other thing I like about this horse, Edison, there's not a lot of early speed in this race. I think McNair is going to be aggressive, leave from the 9 hole, probably take a tuck somewhere, and then, you know, try to find some room in the stretch. I'm against the 2 on the inside, who's 7-2 for Christophe Roux. This mare is dropping down, but really it's just done absolutely no, you know, pace at all, no trot at all in her last 2. And I'm sure she can win, but just her form is just awful right now. And she's also 1 for 25 lifetime. I'm going 5-9-2.
Well, for me here, it will be 1-2-5. I will actually use the 2 Villefranche. I just respect her on the drop, but as you do mention, she has not shown a lot recently. And she is 1 for 25 this year. So there are some red flags, but, she's not been seen this low in some time, so definitely maybe this is the wake-up kind of call she needs. The 5 GP Dreamin', I'm with you. That form is a little dirty just because of the post-10, the break, you know, everything else in there, but definitely I think the one to beat on the drop here. And then the 1 Wish You'd Tell Me I will include. A nice victory last time out, a big back half of that mile from post-8. She'll be a little closer to the action here from post-1, and, you know, he won last time out at that big 21-1 number. Still don't think he's fully going to get respected here and should still be a bit of a price. So 5-9 for you, 1-2-5 for me here in race 1. As we go to race 2, this is non-winners of 23,000 in their last 5 starts or non-winners of 30,000 in their last 10 starts. It's on the pace for a purse of 26,000. It's a select field of 6, and it's a tricky field. You're going to end up using 4 of them in here, Howard.
Yeah, I mean, I don't usually like to use 4 of 6 horses, you know, in a small field, but this race is fairly wide open. My top choice here is going to be the 6 Points North, Jonathan Drury, in the bike. This is a very nice 6-year-old geldings, won over $500,000. I brought up some dirtied up form in the first race. Here's another horse that's really had some 2 very tough trips. 2 back in the, you know, non-winners 16-5 last 5, parked the mile. 26-4 first quarter and was still parked out to a 122-3 third quarter. And then last time left, but then had to come first over again and do a 53-4, 121-3 three quarters and still ran on well. I think if Points North can get any kind of trip, I think he's going to be very tough in here. My other choice would be the very likely winner as well, the number four East End for Philip Houdon. A guy coming out of the preferred, dropping down, has a lot of speed, fits very well in this spot. I will say there looks like there could be a decent amount of speed in this race, so my top choice, Points North, is going to have to figure out a trip. I'm sort of hoping that Drury does not leave Edison and just lets them mix it up a little bit. And it's such a small field that, he can just make one big brush late and go by in the stretch is my, thought there. But I also use the inside horses, HP Napoleon, the one, and the two, Outlaw Ace of Spades. I don't think they're impossible. They're going to get nice inside trips. It's a small field. A lot of it, like this race, obviously is going to be based on the kind of trip they get. But my top choices here would be 6-4-2.
For me here, Howard, I decided to take my stand here in race two. And in fact, I know you take your stand in the next race. For me, it's here. I single the four East End. Dropped out of the preferred. I just think he's got a little bit more class recently than the rest of these. Nice wire-to-wire win there. Two back against nine winners of 16,500. So this is just a little bit of a tougher field here. I mean, it's obviously been up against some tough ones, Beyond Better, Wheels on Fire, some of those really tough pacers in the open and preferred company that obviously we'll talk about some of those later on when we get to race nine. So for me, I think the class of the field here, I will take East End as my single, but I definitely can't blame you for using some others in here because this is a tricky race despite only being a six-horse field. Now,
I think as a horizontal player in this pick five, I think you either do spread like I do or you take a stand in this race because there are some races later on here we're going to talk about that I think are a lot more wide open.
And I think the same could be said actually for race three here, which is the Harvest Series final for those Ontario Sire 3-year-old Philly Pacers going for 50,200. The one for sure that I think is the standout is the two Bet on Becky. I decide to use a couple other horses, but you take the stand here and just single her.
Yeah, I mean, when you look at Bet on Becky, this nice three-year-old filly, by Better's Delight, who is 8-19 lifetime, 280,000. This is a very nice three-year-old filly. The last two times, Edison, she was coming out of the eight hole and still won 40 cents to the dollar. Her main competition, I think most people are going to agree, would be the six, Awesome Hill, who she faced the last two times. Awesome Hill, who is the six, like I said here, was coming out of the seven hole the last two times against Awesome Becky. So Awesome Becky was one slot outside of Awesome Hill the last two times, still beat Awesome Hill, and now Bet on Becky goes to the two hole. So I just, I think logically, unless Bet on Becky gets into some major trouble here, she's clearly the horse to beat. I'm going to take my stand here very, very defensively. Not only Awesome Hill, I suppose, could win. I'd be interested a little bit in the three, Chief's Dream Girl for Jody Jameson. She's in really good form right now. She gets a three hole, which is further inside than she was the last two times when she was parked out the mile. But really, I think Bet on Becky is going to be extremely tough to beat her. I think she's probably going to be, forget that 8-5 Edison. I think she'll be 3-5, 4-5. And it's the Moto Obvious single. That's what I'm going to lean on in the sequence.
Yeah, definitely. I can't fault anything you said there. You kind of highlighted the horses I used, though. I used the two, the three, and the six. The six, Awesome Hill, was really coming with a nice back half there last time out, losing only by 3/4 of a length to Bet on Becky in the end. But, she obviously just kind of led the way from post-date and probably had something left in the tank. So I'm not quite sure if she'll get there tonight, but I'll at least take a chance. But the three, Chief's Dream Girl, is kind of the interesting one to me. I liked her last time out, and she ended up parked from post nine, still finished fourth in there to Bet on Becky. Really liked to win two back, picked her in there. Obviously, it was 1-5, but she did it pretty well. So, obviously, I got to include her here if I used her last time. So, 2-3-6 for me here in race three. Now, race four. Howard, congratulations. This has to be a record on the show. No one has pressed the all button yet. You're going to get close. Fourth race Pacers for 20,000. Non-winners of 11,000 in their last five starts. Or non-winners of 22,500 in their last 10 starts. Howard, you're using how many here?
I am using 7 of the 9. I'd be interested to know why no one has pressed the all button. I think that's just because I'm sure the handicappers that you've had on the show who have done an excellent job. The all button is sort of a, to me, if you hit the all button, that means you have zero opinion at all. I have to say I've close to zero opinion here. I think this is absolutely wide open. The only horses I am not using in this race would be the 2. Let's Get Pickled and the 5 Grand Poobah. So Edison, I highly recommend you open up that bank account and put some win bets on Let's Get Pickled and Grand Poobah.
I use the 3, the 4, and the 7. So maybe I should throw the 2 and the 5 in there too. You know,
I'll just go ahead and talk about it. I think it's wide open. It's non-winners of 1100 last 5 or non-winners of 22.5 last 10. My top choice in this race, I'm going to go with sort of a horse that, again, I don't know about dirtied up, but it will definitely be a price. This is the kind of race, it doesn't matter whether it's thoroughbred, harness, whatever, that I would go price shopping in. The 6, Real Wiley, I believe it's pronounced, 8-1 morning line. When you take a look at this horse, first of all, he's run very well before the vet scratch. I mean, he was closing in sub-27s. Finishing in 150. Now I understand that those races, of course, when it was warmer in October. Since the vet scratch has not done as well. 2 back was from the 9 hole, though. Had no real chance. They went relatively slow. Just picked up the pieces late. Last time left from the 5 hole with Doug McNair. By the way, 3-1 in that race, Edison. 3-1. Left and was up close to a 26-2. First quarter. I think this horse is better just making one brush. My feeling is there's quite a bit of speed in this race. I think a real Wiley has a chance to sit a trip and make that late brush that he's better doing. And I think he's going to be bigger than 8-1. I'm very interested in this horse, especially because of the other speed in the race. The more obvious horses would be the 4, 3-1 under the Southern Sun for Sylvain Filion. Probably most people's top choice. Has a lot of early speed and is going to get a good trip and is also dropping down. And then the 8 for Brizio N for Doug McNair. Again, another horse who's got some speed on the outside and is in fine form. Those are the more obvious horses, but I'm interested in the 6 here quite a bit. But as you know, I'm going very deep, 7 deep in this race.
So I use the 3 and the 4 in here, Rock and Roll Me under the Southern Sun. They're the two kind of logicals I'd like to say. You know, they've both been pretty competitive at this level for under the Southern Sun, even a little bit higher up in company. But the interesting one to me here is the 7, Woodmere Steel Deal, who I know you use as well. This one coming from Prince Edward Island, coming from over there at Charlton and Summerside. And, you know, he obviously has just crushed the competition over there. He went 13 for 13, a really buzz horse last year as a 2-year-old. 8 for 15 this year with 6 seconds and a third, so he's never not hit the board in those 28 lifetime starts. And, you know, 52-1 on the half mile over there at Charlottetown is pretty fast. So, you know, post 7 here, obviously a tougher assignment coming into Ontario and coming into Woodbine Mohawk, but I'm really intrigued to see, I guess, twofold. First things first, before the race, how the public bets him, and also what kind of an effort we get on the track from him. So it's a 3-4-7 for me here. And for you, it is 1, 3, 4, 6, 7, 8, 9.
Yeah, before we move on real quick, just what's been your experience or what have you seen at Woodbine Mohawk for the listeners? Are these horses coming in from these a little bit lower level half-mile tracks to the bigger surface there at Woodbine Mohawk?
You know, the only one I can really think of off the top of my head is probably Four Finger Floyd, who was obviously racing so well at Rideau Carlton on the 5.8. And then came into Woodbine Mohawk and, you know, hasn't quite, you know, he was like 13 for 15 or something like that at Rideau Carlton. So he hasn't done that at Mohawk, but he hasn't been disgraced. He's picked up some seconds and thirds, and I believe did pick up a win the other week as well. So, you know, I kind of put this in the same kind of one that, you know, a 6-1 on the morning line, I suspect he'll take some money. I don't think he's going to be totally outclassed in here, but I wouldn't suspect him to go 13 for 13 here at Mohawk or anything like that.
Yeah, and I think, by the way, he's going to be lower than 6-1 is my guess. Just people love seeing all these ones and these fast times on the half mile. I think this horse might be could win, but in my opinion, probably a little overbet.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess you only got two options really, right? But I think he'll either be overbet or underbet. I don't know. Either he's going to be totally ignored or, yeah, he's probably going to be overbet. And if I had to guess between the two, I'm probably with you. I think more than anything, especially was a 2-back, 2-back there at 3-2. And he wasn't even the favorite in there in that Maritime Breeders' Final. and won by 9 lengths there, coming home in 27-1 over that half-mile track there in Charlottetown. So, yeah, I got to suspect he's taking some money in the spot for sure.
Well, I think it's a little bit of an in the trainer you trust as well, right? I mean, Carmen Asiello is not going to ship this horse up here to lose. So I think if you like this horse, I think that the fact that this got a very live trainer should give you some confidence as well.
Also, a very valid point. Yeah, the barn that he comes from definitely also should give some confidence. And James McDonald driving as well, so for sure. To race five, the closeout leg here, Pacers, $18,000 the purse. It's five-year-olds and younger. Non-winners of three races are $36,500 lifetime. And we see this one pretty similarly here. It's 5, 6, 9, and 10 for me, 5, 6, and 10 for you. So I'll talk about my 9 and let you talk about the other three. For the 9, he's in control. This is just one that's been racing against those Harvest Series company up in the stakes. Has a fourth, couple of fourths and a second. So a little bit of a class drop here after coming from that Ontario Harvest Series final, losing to Control Heaven in there, finishing again fourth. But the outside post here to work with, but I think he's definitely one in with a chance. And then, like you, I use the 5, 6, and 10.
Yeah, my 9 is the fourth choice. The way I see this race, first of all, I will admit that I didn't watch this replay, but I highly recommend everyone go back and watch the November 27th, 7th race where the 5, 6, and 10 are coming out of. Actually, I think there's a few others because, you know, when you have a lot of horses coming out of the same race, you really need to watch that replay. And unfortunately, I did not have a chance to do that, so I apologize, Edison. But my top choice here is the 10. Now, better be flying for Jody Jameson. Not usually a fan of a horse coming out of the 10 hole. But when you look at this race really carefully, and I don't know if you feel the same way, Edison, I just don't see a lot of early speed here. I mean, the 1 does not have a lot of early speed. The 2, maybe. The 3, no. The 4 is coming off a bunch of judges' scratches and hasn't raced in a month. The 5 is more of a closer. The 6 is more of a closer. The 7 doesn't usually show a lot of speed. I mean, the only real early speed to me is from the 8, other than the 10. So I think Jameson's going to be very aggressive. This 3-year-old gelding's in really good form right now, and if he gets to the lead or even a tuck in the pocket, I think Better Be Flying is going to be very tough to beat here, mainly because of the pace situation. The other choice, of course, we just talked about, the 6 Oki from Muskogee, love that name for Trevor Henry. This is a horse that's an excellent closer, 26-3 last time. It looks like by the line, the horse stayed on the inside though. I don't know if he got into trouble, to be very honest, so I'd have to watch that replay. But that was his first start in over a month, Edison. So you got to give a little credit to a horse that raced that well off the month layoff. And then the 5, South Beach Hanover, seems very logical as well. Again, coming out of that same race and finishing ahead of Oki from Muskogee. But I do not like the 1 for 22 this year and 2 for 29 in his last 2 years. South Beach Hanover just seems to have trouble finding the winner's circle.
Well, Howard, not a whole lot left for me to add there. So, yep, so you covered it pretty well for us here. 5, 6, 9, 10 for me, 5, 6, and 10 for you, and that rounds it out. And to recap our tickets, for me it is 1, 2, 5 with 4, with 2, 3, 6, with 3, 4, 7, with 5, 6, 9, and 10 for $21.60 play. And for you, Howard, it is 5, 9 with 1, 2, 4, 6, with 2, with 1, 3, 4, 6, 7, 8, and 9 with 5, 6, and 10 for a $33.60 play. And for sure, Howard, you know what? You know, you it's not quite all but one logic, but all but two's got to be in the same realm. That you're right. That the fans listening in may want to go play the 2 and the 5 in that race.
Yeah, I wouldn't play in them. It's not going to cost you a lot more money with the 20-cent, bet. I don't like to hit the all button really too much because it just sort of makes me feel as if I'm not fully doing my job handicapping, but it won't cost you that much more. So go ahead and hit that all button, get one of those big bombs home and build your ticket to a nice score.
Well, Howard, one last race for us to talk about here on the Woodbine Mohawk card, and it will be race number 9, the preferred for the Pacers, going 34,000. Select field of 6 here, and I'll give my opinion first. We'll start with the morning line favorite. That's Wheels on Fire at 8-5. Now, these horses, of course, take turns beating up one another and is preferred. So, Howard, if you even want to change your opinion after hearing my statement here, this might be some information for you. 2 back, I was a big fan of Beyond Better in there. and ended up getting bet down to, I believe, 3-2 or 8-5 rather, and disappointed in there for me, finishing fourth. Never really got too terribly involved in that preferred two back. Then the following week, I was on Utrecht from Post 4, and I said I was particularly against Wheels on Fire. Anyone else could beat me in the field except for Wheels on Fire. Well, Utrecht finished second behind Wheels on Fire. So now this week, I will go to Wheels on Fire. He had a little bit of time off there, a couple weeks off, and, you know, I've now been impressed with the progression now back in the form, and I think that last win showed that Wheels on Fire is back here, 11-24 this year. He'll try to pick up a second win in a row in the preferred. But given my track record, Howard, you may want to look elsewhere if you weren't already planning to go to Wheels on Fire.
Well, you know, again, this is a small, very competitive, excellent field. You really need to nitpick in these races and find reasons why you like another horse, you know, over someone else, because many of these horses are pretty close in their ability. I'm going with the 4, Utrecht, so I'm going against Wheels on Fire. Utrecht's really interesting, the fact only 15 lifetime, you know, starts, and it's just, he sort of got a late start to his career for the aforementioned Carmen Osiello. But I like the fact that Utrecht's inside of Wheels on Fire, so he's going to get the jump. I think, you know, this horse is just as fast early as Wheels on Fire, and Jody can just leave and see what McNair is going to do on the outside. I prefer Utrecht in this spot. I certainly respect Beyond Better. You know, if he gets the right trip, he can win. I'm a little bit interested in the 1 here, though, Cold Creek Cabo. Now, for Travis Henry, this horse is stepping up in class. There's no question about it. But closing 27-4, 2 back. Edison, how about that nice 26-4 in 149-2 last time? Again, a cheaper race, and they did go 53-4 to the half. But Cold Creek Cabo, the 1, 5-1 morning line, is in razor-sharp form. And if they sort of, you know, heat it up early and Utrecht and Wheels on Fire, you know, ding-dong on the lead, I think Cold Creek Cabo is a bit interesting to upset the field.
Yeah, definitely a couple different directions to go in here with just the 6-horse field for sure. But again, this is the preferred pace. The featured race there on the 11-race program with by Mohawk tomorrow night gets started at, or rather Saturday night, Saturday, December 4th. That will get underway at 7 p.m. And again, you can, as always, visit www.woodbine.com/Mohawk/free-programs for your very own free programs for both Friday and Saturday night racing action at Woodbine Mohawk. So, Howard, before I let you go, since I know you're a thoroughbred guy, I just got to ask you two things. First of all, opening night tonight, one of my historically worst tracks of all time betting, synthetic tracks in general, really, but particularly Turfway, I hit on a $6 ticket, the $100 late pick 3 here, so maybe it's a sign it's going to be a good year for me at Turfway, but what's your experience with Turfway?
Well, congratulations. Turfway, especially last year, was very difficult. I mean, it's huge fields. I don't mind synthetic tracks, but, you know, they've raised the purses there as well. So I think it's going to be a very good meet. I usually, you know, focus more on Gulfstream and Oaklawn, which are both, by the way, opening tomorrow as we're taping here on Thursday. So I don't play Turfway too often. However, you have a nice mix of horses that, you know, are turf horses that can run on the sin, and you have some dirt horses that obviously are running there as well. So you get big fields. You're going to have bigger purses. I like betting Turfway. I just find it extremely difficult.
Yeah, I definitely do as well. And gosh, we could talk forever now to mention Oaklawn and Gulfstream. But yeah, we had Ashley Mayhew on the show last week to talk in a little bit of Gulfstream action, getting ready to start their championship meet tomorrow. Turf back with synthetic and with main track. So 3 services now at Gulfstream. And for Oaklawn, good old Vic Stauffer at Oaklawn, where the sun always shines. Back in action and earlier than usual this year with that early December start. But Howard, the last thing I will ask you before we sign off here, go north a little bit to Aqueduct. What about Aqueduct? Did you look at all? Gosh, they've got almost 300,000 tomorrow in a pick 6 carryover. And of course, Saturday, the big, personally, one of my favorite days of the year, Cigar Mile Day.
Well, it's so interesting you asked that. If I may plug my podcast, the HHH Racing Podcast on YouTube. I just finished literally about an hour ago, Edison, a podcast with David Aragona, who does a great job. He's the morning line for NYRA, excellent handicapper, works for Timeform US. Just did a 1-hour show breaking down in detail the Cigar Mile card and the late pick 5, and also talked about morning lines, which I think is a very interesting topic as well. So yeah, I'm very interested in Aqueduct. on Saturday. There's also a $3,000 live money contest that I may go in or may partner up with someone else in. And then, of course, there's a huge pick six tomorrow, Friday, that I may just dabble in a little bit. I actually did play it today. There was a carryover. I was 5 out of 6. So maybe I'll take that consolation money and play in tomorrow's pick six. But Saturday's card is awesome. And check out my podcast. I think you folks would really enjoy it with David Aragona on YouTube.
Yeah, I think just personally from experience, I really think David is truly, I've said it before and I'll say it again, I think David is truly one of the best morning line odds makers there are out there. I think his numbers are almost always just about spot on.
Yeah, he's fantastic. He's really knowledgeable. Great guy to talk to. Very humble. Excellent handicapper as well. So, yeah, David is fantastic. I think this is his fourth year as the morning line maker out there. And, you know, he's someone you really need to pay attention to because he's also an excellent trip handicapper. And we showed a bunch of replays on my show. And I promise you, Edison Hatter, you will be on the HHH Racing Podcast very soon. We will collaborate on that. And we'll get you on my show as well.
Hey, I certainly will look forward to that, but I can tell you for tonight, the first thing I've got sitting here on my table, Howard, as soon as we're done, is Friday Aqueduct DRF past performances and Saturday. So I am going to go listen to your show while I take my own peek through those and get ready for the next 2 days at the Big A. But for now, Howard, thank you once again for appearing a second time on my show, and I will certainly look forward to being on yours in the future.
Thanks, Edison. I really love chopping up with you. Good luck to everyone on Saturday at Woodbine.
And we'll wish everyone listening the best of luck, whether they are playing at Woodbine Mohawk Friday or Saturday or both days. Meadowlands Racing this weekend, as we mentioned, Gulfstream backs this weekend, Oaklawn, obviously the Fairgrounds just getting started, Tampa Bay just getting started, Turfway, so all sorts of just great winter racing action. We are dialed in now for a good winter of some horse racing, harness variety, and thoroughbred variety, and we'll wish you the best of luck this weekend, no matter what you're wagering. We'll hope all your wagers are winning ones. And we'll talk to you next week on First Over with Edison Hatter.